Intern Allen Show, episode 44. Wednesday, July 17th, 9:22 p.m. Not a lot of real sports on this podcast this week. Not a lot of real sports happening at all. We have 5 games of Twins baseball to talk about. I guess I'll talk about 6 games, even though I think I was potting while the last of those, or the 6th of those games was happening. voice is not feeling good, by the way. Might struggle throughout this. But yeah, not a lot of podcasting to, or not a lot of sports to actually talk about on this podcast. So we'll talk about all the other things related to sports that have happened. I mean, I guess the All-Star Game is fake sports, kind of sports. We'll talk about Summer League, that's kind of sports. I mean, it's real sports, but not the real players. but yeah, let's just hop right into it. The Twins played 5 games, or played 6 games. We'll just talk about the 6 games. Even though I was potting during the first game of the White Sox series, so I was talking about it then. Last 6 games, 3-3. Took 2 of 3 from the White Sox, who are not a good team. That extended the streak of taking 2 of 3 from every opponent we had for like 3 weeks there, but took 2 of 3 from the White Sox. First game was in extras, then a game was rained out, and then split the doubleheader the next day. One of the doubleheader games was a good game from Pablo Lopez, a good outing, which feels important because his sort of struggles have been, I mean, not necessarily struggles, but not being as good as he used to be, not being as good as he should be. It's kind of been well documented throughout the first half of this year, and he's a guy that if he can turn it around and be the guy he was last year, then the upside of this team feels a lot higher than it does otherwise. By the way, I'm watching Summer League right now. Phoenix and Oklahoma City. Don't know basically anybody on either of these Summer League teams. I think Buddy Boeheim is out there for OKC, which is crazy. Maybe like David Roddy, who played for Colorado State in that one tournament where they lost in the first round. Thought he played for the Warriors in the NBA, but guess not. Don't know if I know anybody else in this on these Summer League teams. I think the Lakers, Summer League Lakers, are playing in 5 minutes, in which case Bronny James is going to be playing, so that's exciting. Back to the Twins. One in extras in the 11th. Took an inning for the boys to figure it out and score a run. But then split the doubleheader the next day. Took 2 of 3 from the White Sox. We're good with that. Took 1 of 3 from the Giants. So lost the series. First series loss in nearly a month for the Twinkies. Got killed game one. Joe Ryan was not effective. The lineup was not effective. 5 runs in 5 innings. He battled his way through 5 innings, but never really want to see a run per inning type of outing. And then we only scored 1 ourselves, so that was, you know, just not a good game for us. Chill, easy W, game 2, 1-4-2. And then a game that feels like, I don't know, I don't necessarily want to say we should have won it, but the way that we lost it was pretty fucking pathetic in the third game of that series. We're trailing 2-2 rip the entire game. We get a big Manny Margot double to tie the game, 2-run double to tie the game in the top of the 9th. All of a sudden, the boys are buzzing. We can win the series, tie game, just send Duran out there. Mike Yastrzemski hits, by the way, the real loons remember my Carl Yastrzemski jersey, his grandson. he hits a, I mean, it was like, it was probably always going to be a double, I guess. It was hit well, but it wasn't like it was smoked. The exit velo was probably not that high. It's just kind of a big park, or a big part of the park in San Francisco, to right center. But Manny Margot mishandled the... He was never going to catch it, but mishandled the hop, like fell over. Like picking it up off the one hop, the one big hop, because it was a kind of a fly ball vibes. It like fell over. Throws it into the infield. Brooksley then throws it into the dugout. And so like they score a walk-off solo Little League home run. Because Dumb and Dumber couldn't figure it out. Not often that you see a one-base home run trot, but Margot's error, him falling over, allowed Yastrzemski to take third. And so then Brooksley threw it into the dugout, and all of a sudden, okay, well, he's obviously going to score now because it's a dead ball and you advance one base. So you have like the one-base home run, like a 90-foot home run trot to walk off the game. It was a very, very weird... very weird, like, visual. Because even on Little League home runs, like, in the inside the park, whatever, where shit's just going wrong, usually there's a guy sprinting and then clapping his hands as he hits home plate, or maybe there's a head-first slide to home plate. It's something action-like is happening. It's very rare that you get the overthrow of third base into the dugout leading... Oh, Isaiah Wong plays for the Phoenix Summer League team. Kane for life. But yeah, it's very rare that you have an overthrow to a dead ball. Everybody moves up a base to win the game. It's anyway. So that was annoying. Not really Duran's fault. The ball wasn't even hit that crazy well. It was hit pretty good, but wasn't hit crazy well. Obviously an unearned run because there are two errors on the play. But you know, not the best way to go into the break, but all in all, it is what it is. It's one out of 162 games. We move. So we're sitting at 54-42 at the All-Star break. Play resumes Friday for us, I believe. So that's a 91-win pace, which, especially with the way the wild card is these days, 91 is going to get you into the playoffs. It's going to get you into a wild card series for sure. As long as we can kind of continue that pace, stay healthy, in some cases get healthy, with Royce Lewis coming back hopefully soon. Obviously Correa's been kind of battling the health a little bit. He sat out of his All-Star appearance, which is pretty smart to be honest, but but yeah, as long as we can continue this pace, hopefully start winning some games against the Guardians. We'll have plenty down the stretch. Then we should be in plenty good spot come October. And then from there, you just roll the dice and hope things go your way. Right now, we sit 2.5 clear of the second wild card. Or 2.5 clear of the fourth place in the wild card. So right now, we are the second wild card. We're a half game of the third wild card, the Red Sox, who were playing really, really good baseball the past, like, 2-3 weeks before the All-Star break. Jaron Duran has been sick for them. He obviously won the All-Star game with a pump. Rafi Devers has been sick, too. It's kind of just those two. I don't know. There's maybe some others. I don't really know. Houston is... the fifth wild card spot, or right now fifth in the wild card. They got a lot of good players that, if they start playing well, if they start pitching better, all of a sudden that's a scary team to have to like stave off to keep in playoff position. The Royals are in fourth, just a half game back of the Red Sox, and so we're 2.5 clear of them. And the Royals feel like... Well, it could go one of two ways, I guess. The Royals over the last month have kind of fallen off a little bit. They're not pitching as well as they used to. Things are not going as well as they did. They just, like, can't hit on the road at all. But they're still a really young team with a lot of really talented young players that if they just kind of figure it out over the back half of this season, then they could make a run too. So we're going to have to play good baseball. There's a lot of like good to really good teams. There's not a lot of great teams. There's a lot of average teams, but there's a lot of kind of teams just in that spot right below where we are. that we're going to have to continue to be better than, and that's what it is. Got to keep at our pace of 91, 92 wins here, and things should be good. Everybody's kind of waiting on the Cleveland, the collapse. Not necessarily collapse, but them to sort of play down to their talent. They've been playing way above their talent. There's multiple metrics that say that. Some of it is real. Like, I think there's an unwillingness among the Twins community to accept that, you know, Stephen Kwan is one of the best hitters in the MLB. He is. He's one of the best. He's probably the best bat-to-ball guy in MLB right now. Better than Arias. Hits for better power than Arias. Walks more than Arias. He's a really, really dangerous hitter. One of the best hitters in the league. Absolutely one of the hardest outs in the league. And that's not something that you can, like, sit and deny. Josh Naylor is fat and doesn't look the part, but he's every bit of like the power first baseman that you want to have. The guy that's going to hit a bunch of homers, drive in a bunch of runs, play a decent first base. He's every bit of that, even though he's fat. And it's not like a sexy name. Josh Naylor's been a guy that's killed the Twins for a couple years now. And every time he does it, I'm like, that guy's really like that guy seems like he always hits homers. And all of a sudden, bang, he had a big season. He's got a big season going where he's consistently mashing the ball. And then, weirdly enough, they're like down. I mean, Jose Ramirez is Jose Ramirez. He's a Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer for a reason. And he's going to get his throughout the rest of the season as well. So those three guys have kind of been leading the way for the lineup. And then, honestly, the pitching is worse than you'd expect Cleveland to be because they've historically been a very good pitching team, at least over the last 10 years or so. But they've sort of been hitting well enough that hasn't mattered. All that being said, there's a lot of metrics out there that show that they are significantly worse than the record says they are in terms of like luck. And I don't know exactly what goes into the metrics, but I just see them and they say that Cleveland isn't as good as they are. And then I believe them. So yeah, we'll see. We're 4.5 back right now, which is kind of where we've been forever. We don't really grow on 4.5 back. If we keep doing that for a couple more months, 4.5 back will start to look like kind of a lot. Right now it's definitely doable, but I think we need to ratchet it up a little bit. And we need Cleveland to fall back a little bit. And if that happens, then we can still win the division. Injuries will obviously play a huge part in this on either side if they happen. But that's sort of a given. As far as All-Star Weekend, that happened. I guess it's not even a weekend. All-Star Monday and Tuesday night. The home run derby was cool. I think it was actually a good home run derby. It was it's pretty dramatic at the end. You know, a little swing off. Teoscar Hernandez won and against Alec Boehm, and there was like a swing off to see who'd even get into the finals or whatever. And then there was a swing off in the finals. It was all in all pretty good. There's no reason. There's literally no reason. This is almost a you don't know ball take of the week, but I don't think enough people honestly believe this, that for it to be a you don't know ball take of the week. The only people that believe this are the people in charge or Major League Baseball. There's no reason to do the timed homer swing thing. There's no reason. The home run derby was relatively perfect when it was 10 swings, 10 outs. How many homers can you hit each round? Everybody moves on. Like, that was – maybe I was just younger and I enjoyed it more, but, like – there wasn't like that was a perfect home run derby. Like it was that each night of the home run derby was so fun to watch every year. And now it's just, it's so fucking weird. like, we're going to do a timed thing, but there's also a limited number of pitches that you can see, and then we're going to give you 3 outs. Like, just give the 10 outs and move on. Like, who cares? You're just, like, tiring the guys out unnecessarily, and nobody really even appreciates the home runs that are hit. Anyway, I feel like everybody agrees with me on that, so I don't even need to make it, you know, ball take of the week. But anyway, considering that the format makes no sense, the actual result was, like, a pretty good tournament, I guess. Pretty good, you know, final ending, I guess. The national anthem was bad. That is sort of the only thing that anybody's going to remember. I almost forgot who won the home run derby already. It was Teoscar Hernandez. But Ingrid Andress, who actually has a pretty good country song, The Breaking More Hearts Than Mine, pretty good song. I like it. But apparently she was hammered and then just couldn't sing. By the way, it's not like easy to go sing the national anthem. I've never actually done it. I'm kind of scared of doing it. I have a master's in music and singing, and I'm kind of scared to sing the national anthem in stadiums because, like, I don't know. There's a lot of people. It's gets scary. That's probably not why she sucked. And by the way, that being said, I could absolutely knock her out of the park in terms of quality, but I wouldn't be hammered. So, you know, it is what it is. It was a pretty painful national anthem. Pretty painful. It's never good when you have to apologize the next day and say that you're going to therapy or whatever she's doing, rehab. But yeah, the All-Star game itself was exactly how every other All-Star game has gone the past 10 years. It's always like 4-3, 5-3, 4-2, 3-1. They're all really low scoring because you get the best pitchers in the game just get to ramp their stuff up for one or two innings instead of having to pitch five. It's hard to hit. A couple guys get a hold of one, a couple homers in there make a difference in the game, and that's kind of it. Shohei did what he did. By the way, like, the Twins' presence in All-Star Weekend almost didn't exist. Like, if just like the Hall of Fame, low-key, remember my complaint about that, like, almost a year ago. If you didn't know the Twins were a franchise heading into the All-Star game, you would not know that they were a franchise in Major League Baseball after the All-Star game. Willie Castro ended up being our only representative. He had one plate appearance and did not get hit and was retired, and that was it. And that was our only presence of the All-Star game in general. For a team as good as we are, and this isn't even necessarily a complaint because I get why it happens. Correa should have played and would have gotten maybe a couple at-bats, but you always got to rest the plantar fasciitis type shit. But for a team as good as we are, to just barely exist in the All-Star game is kind of crazy. But we don't have guys that are hitting crazy amounts of homers unless, you know, Ryan Jeffers isn't going to fucking hit in the home run derby. And we're not really a star team. We're a team where everybody's pretty damn good, but you know, we don't have a Shohei, we don't have a Bobby Witt, we don't have a, you know, even a Jose Ramirez, you know. So, we got a lot of really good players, and that's why we're pretty good. But, you know, our all-star, one of our big all-stars last year, Pablo Lopez, hasn't played well this year. It makes sense. I can't even complain. But it is weird to have a team that, you know, if all things go as they seem to be going, we should have a real kind of chance to be relevant to the postseason. It's weird to have a team that can say that, only have one all-star that's barely involved the entire weekend, when a team like the Phillies has like 9 all-stars. But it is what it is. The MLB draft also happened this past week, and this is where we get into, like, not even real sports. And does anybody care about the MLB draft? I don't know, but I need to have something to talk about on the pod, so we're going to talk about it. Drafted 3 infielders, all left side of the infielders, to start with our first 3 picks, which were the 21st, 33rd, and 60th pick. Then 1 pitcher, then, like, 4 outfielders, then, like, all pitchers to end the draft. Which the fact that we just loaded up on pitchers that... We loaded up our picks that cost nothing on pitchers to hope that they might someday become something is very Twins. We love, like, low-risk, low-floor, high-ceiling pitching prospects. We love even, like, MLB guys with MLB experience that are low-floor, high-ceiling. To see if we can get something out of them. We work on their slider, and then all of a sudden they're so much better. And then sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Dylan Bundy was a guy like that. He only, like, ever threw 89, and it didn't really change anything. But, yeah, there's guys like that literally at every level of the Twins organization. And we just got a bunch more of them. They will play in the Complex League for a year or two. But we'll go. I'll go through the top four picks. Just introduce the names, I guess. So that when they, you know, some of these guys might be in the big league club in 2 years. And so when they come up, you'll have heard. I will be the first person to have told you, maybe, unless you were locked in on the draft about some of these guys. So you can credit me when that happens. Our first pick, the 21st overall pick in the draft. Kalen Culpepper is his name. He's got a girl name, which is interesting. His name's Kalen. That's a girl name. 21-year-old, currently listed as a shortstop out of Kansas State. The good thing about him here is that I've actually heard of him before. I think I saw a highlight or two of Kalen Culpepper hitting for Kansas State, and I saw the highlights because he likes to, like, get super jacked up and, like, sally hard. So, love that. He's a beast. Plus hit and plus power tools. So, you know, projects to be a really good major league hitter. The defense is a thing where we'll kind of see. It kind of depends on a little bit how he grows, a little bit what kind of hitter he wants to be even. Right now he is like 6'1", 185 or something like that. So a little skinny, just a little skinny. He's not crazy skinny. But there's a path where he might bulk up and turn more into a power hitter, where then the defense is probably going to – he's probably going to be moved to a corner infield position or a corner outfield position. Right now the speed is a plus tool as well. If he kind of stays skinny and more of a bat-to-ball guy, then maybe he stays athletic enough and sort of limber enough to play shortstop really well. The other question there is, at what point in the next 5 to 7 years are the Twins going to have a big need at shortstop? And the answer is, I don't really know. We've kind of turned Royce into a third baseman now, and part of that is because the knee has hurt with the mobility. So, maybe Culpepper plays second base at the next level. It's really hard to sell. But with a guy that hits as well as he's projected to hit, and he's not like a shitty defender, but like the guy that hits as well as he's projected to hit, you kind of find a position. It seems like he's capable of playing a couple different places. I personally would doubt that he ends up being a shortstop long term. He doesn't look like a shortstop the way he hits the ball. Not that that makes any sense, but it just kind of does. He looks like a pull power tall guy that's going to play corner infield. He's what he looks like to me. But, I mean, he feels like Royce Lewis to me. What Royce Lewis has now become instead of what Royce Lewis was when he was drafted, which was a lot more of a speed guy. But, you know, the knees breaking down will do that for you. He's a menace. He hits the ball hard, sellies hard, bat flips hard. I like it. I'm excited about him. Our next pick at 33, he's also a 21-year-old shortstop. His name's Kyle DeBarge. So we drafted two 21-year-old shortstops in the first round. DeBarge isn't technically in the first round. He's in the first compensatory pick round, which is something that's confusing and means something. where they got it. I think if one of your, I think baseball rewards you for your top prospects becoming major league players, and so then they give you a pick when one of your past picks becomes a major leaguer in your system. That could have been completely making that up. That I think that's right, though. So that happened at some point for us. We get compensatory picks. There's like a mini round in between each round in the MLB draft. The MLB draft is like one of the more confusing things in all of sports in the first place, because first of all, nobody actually really knows, like the NFL draft, right? Like everybody kind of knows what's going on. You can, like, all of the information is out there. You can get the wrong pick sometimes, but you always kind of knew the information. So like, for example, I don't know. I guess I'll say Justin Fields. Like, Justin Fields hasn't had the career in the NFL that you would have liked for him to have when he was drafted. But there's nothing that was, like, surprising. Everybody kind of knew who Justin Fields was. Everybody had watched him. And I'm talking, like, not just team executives, people making decisions, but, like, media members, fans. Everybody kind of knew what he was. That is not the case with the MLB draft. Nobody knows who these guys are. A lot of people whose job it is to, like, cover prospects for media companies, like, disagree about whether a guy is going to be a good hitter or not. Like, completely, I'm looking up these guys for, like, this purpose, for talking about them on the pod. And some people are saying, oh, this guy is a great fielder, can play multiple positions. Oh, this guy's not going to be a good fielder, is going to have to be stuck in left field. Like, they're all saying the same shit about, or they're saying different shit about the same guy. It's kind of, it's such a, like, wild, wild west compared to the NBA or MLB draft or NFL draft. Anyway, Kyle DeBarge, 21-year-old shortstop, Louisiana Lafayette. Just a small little baby guy, this guy. 5'9", 175. Seems like he would actually be a shortstop. Plus defense right now. Plus speed and contact as well. So he feels like a guy that would be super popular in like the 90s, gets on base, steals bases, all that shit. I don't know exactly where the place is for him to in this day and age. He's going to have to hit for more power. And it's not like he doesn't hit for power. You don't get drafted in the first round anymore in MLB if you don't hit for some kind of power, especially out of college. So it's there. But he doesn't necessarily project to be, like, a big power guy. He's going to have to, like, turn into the type of power guy who knows how to specifically swing his body to generate power, which then can kind of take away from the bat-to-ball skills the way it did for, like, Brian Dozier, who was a similar frame and ended up hitting for a lot of power, but then he was hitting 220, and at that point, are we actually benefiting that much? He's the guy that everybody says is actually going to stick at shortstop, where Kalen Culpepper might not. But they are the same age and the same position in the same round of the draft, which is reminiscent of the Minnesota Timberwolves in 2007 or whatever that was. Billy Amick was drafted in the second round, number 60. He's a third baseman. This is a sort of traditional raw power guy. Plus power, plus bat-to-ball skills, but not a great approach right now, so he's still striking out a lot. Which is probably preferable to a guy that's never really shown that he can hit the ball for contact. He just swings at too many bad pitches right now is the issue with Billy Amick, why his strikeouts are so high. But played for the Vols, 23 homers. Obviously, they won the College World Series, so he's a winner, just like J.J. McCarthy. That matters a lot. Only really one good season of college was at Clemson, then transferred to Tennessee. Didn't play a lot at Clemson, which then is a little bit odd that all of a sudden he played a lot at Tennessee and raked at Tennessee, and then they won the title. So a bit of like a he's a guy who's risen up the rankings just in this past year, in kind of a very big way, because he wasn't entirely relevant as any kind of early round draft pick before this year. And based on just this past year, if he had like three good years that were similar to his last year, his most recent year, then this is a guy that you're looking at drafting in the first round. But he's had one good year of college ball, and you're like, okay, well, who is he? Can we count on this being the guy? But yeah, 6'1", 220, 21 years old, going to play third base, going to be corner infield. If we can straighten out the approach, it seems like a very high upside guy that could hit a lot of pumps for the Twins 4 years down the road, or hopefully get there sooner than that, 2 years down, 2-3 years down the road. Last pick in the second round, also technically a compensatory round, whatever bullshit, Dusan Hill. We have a white guy named Dusan. Maybe it's Dason, I don't know. Dusan Hill, Dasan Hill, 18 years old, 6'5", 165, left-handed pitcher. I don't need to tell you that that's pretty fucking skinny. I weigh like 160, so imagine my weight and then add on 3.5 inches of height, and you got a pretty skinny dude. Obviously, he's 18 years old, so he'll gain some weight, but throws 95 as an 18-year-old. Almost like the lefty delivery. He doesn't throw like Chris Sale. He throws way more over the top. Somewhere in between three quarters and straight over the top, whereas Chris Sale is somewhere between three quarters and sidearm. But he looks like Chris Sale on the mound. Just long, skinny, lanky. But obviously, like, Chris Sale is a guy that was, I'm sure, skinny in high school, skinny in college, if he went to college, I don't know. And then just never filled out much, always was kind of skinny. This guy might fill out more, you don't know. He's 18 years old. There's a lot of chance to grow. And obviously, being 18, drafted out of high school, it's a good 5 years before this guy's going to play in the majors, and his body could look completely different. His stuff could be completely different. The velocity already being 95, and then being able to work with a big league staff or a, you know, major league affiliate staff for 4 years, that velocity is going to come into the league at 98 to 100 probably. According to scouting reports, he's got a plus curveball and a plus slider as well. A really good slider. Got a 60 grade on it instead of a 55, which is sort of the standard plus grade. So we'll see. I mean, I can see him. You're obviously imagining a little far into the future, but just being a really, really nasty fastball slider guy. Closer type, maybe. Obviously, the big question is, they don't really know at this point, because, again, he's 18, is what kind of stamina ability he'll have. Right now, based on what I've read, he starts out really with really high velocity, 94, 95, and then by the fourth inning or so, he's throwing 91, which obviously you want that to kind of ride and kind of settle at one spot throughout the outing. But, again, he's 18, so we'll see. All that was really good information for 2 years from now. So, come back and reference. Thanks. Speaking of really good information for 2 years from now, or maybe never, we're just talking about the Wolves Summer League now. I'm not going to go game by game, because it doesn't fucking matter if we win the game. Like, the Summer League, it doesn't matter if we win the games at all. So I'm essentially targeting three players that I think this Summer League matters for. And those three players are, you can probably guess them, Rob Dillingham, Terrence Shannon, And Leonard Miller is the last one. So we'll just go player by player and how they, you know, we've played three games or 2-1, if that really matters for us. First player to talk about, our first round pick, one of our two first round picks, the earlier of the two, is Rob Dillingham, who has been, I would say, is a very good descriptor of how he's played so far. Has not been very efficient shooting the ball, and this can happen. I'm a bit of a summer league aficionado, and by that I mean I probably watch four games a year, which is more than anybody should watch of the summer league. But it's very common for guys to kind of completely suck balls in their first, like, two summer league games. I talked about it on the first ever episode of this podcast. I talked about Victor Wembanyama's first summer league game where he looked horrible. And it doesn't necessarily mean anything. But Dillingham's first game, 2-for-12 shooting, got 4 points, did have 5 assists. Second game, 5-for-14 shooting, got 14 points, 8 assists. That's his best game of the summer league season so far. Next game, 3-for-10 shooting, 10 points, 7 assists. So, like, the plus here is that the passing skill, the floor vision, has been good. Putting guys in great spots, creating layups for his teammates, that type of shit. He just hasn't been efficient with his own shot at all, really. You know, 2-of-12 is bad. Is that what it was? Did I even... Yeah, 2-of-12 is bad. 3-of-10 is bad. 5-of-14 is only slightly better. But yeah, so right now you can't really say that he's bringing anything to the table scoring-wise. Yeah, he had 14 points in one game, but took 14 shots, so is that even really an accomplishment? He looks a little small on an NBA court, and I know that he, you know, isn't big, but does look a little small. He looks short and skinny compared to, and he's not even on an NBA court. He's on the summer league court, where a lot of dudes in summer league are really, really talented. They're just not the right size, so they'll be in the G League for the rest of their career. So to look small on that court and then get to think about you being on the NBA court is, you know, interesting. It's to be, to carry some concern for that. But he does have, like, the juice, though. Like, you can tell he's quicker than everybody. He can still kind of get where he needs to get. It's just a little bit uncomfortable right now. Maybe it's the NBA line. Maybe it's the slightly better competition. Maybe it's the nerves. I don't know. Maybe it's the Timberwolves system, to what extent they're actually running anything. But, I mean, the assists tell me that he's not that uncomfortable because he's still seeing things and making plays, but he's just not shooting the ball well, which, whatever. Next guy up, Terrence Shannon, our next pick. And if Dillingham's disappointed a little bit, Terrence Shannon has impressed quite a bit. Had 25 in his first game, in game one, 9-of-14, so very efficient. Um, 19 in the next game on 6-of-11, including 7-of-8 from the line, getting into the line. Only had 9, but only shot the ball 5 times in the third game here. So he looks athletic for again, summer league court, but he looks like one of the best athletes out there. He can jump through the fucking roof. His first points as a Minnesota Timberwolf, as a Timberwolf, or in a Timberwolf jersey, his first points was a big dunk in semi-transition, like a complete poster in that game against the Pelicans, against Yves Missy. This is the guy he postered. Yves Missy, whatever, however you say his name. Some French dude. Everybody's a French dude. I think I was a little skeptical on him on draft night, just because I just the way that he scores doesn't seem to be the way that a lot of people his size score in the NBA, but he is a really, really good athlete. And like, I'm not going to say Russell Westbrook, so there I want it to be clear that I'm not going to compare him to Russell Westbrook, but some of the things he's doing in these summer league games are kind of similar to that. And if he's actually that good of an athlete, then there is absolutely a spot for him in our rotation. You know, I got to check his wingspan.
What's his wingspan? Let me look this shit up. Is this going to be easy to find or not? Six, seven wingspan is, yeah, it's not great. I don't know. If he's young Russell Westbrook, kind of, or like half of that good, then he'll be very, very nice to have on this team. I think with these two guys specifically, it's easy to see them being really, really good in the NBA because they were relevant in college and we all watched them in March Madness, and we watched Terrence Shannon, you know, score 25 points a game in college. And so, like, on one hand, you have to like almost doubt that they're going to be good because of, you don't want to like let your bias that they played in college come through. But at some point, if you're really good at scoring in college and you've shown that you're really good scoring in the summer league, there's just a chance you're a really good scorer and you're going to get yours no matter where you go. And even if he's getting 10 points a game off the bench, that's going to be incredibly helpful for this team. So I'm starting to be more and more optimistic that Terrence Shannon is just kind of a guy that can score it at any point or at any level of the game. Last guy is Leonard Miller. I think there was this thing that happened with the Lakers a while back, and I'm forgetting his name right now. His name is Talen Horton Tucker, where if you follow the Lakers, they, like, won a title, and then they're like, and he's not even, like, Talen Horton Tucker's not even playing yet. He's up next. And then Talen Horton Tucker was never up next. THT was a guy that wasn't highly drafted, wasn't big in college, but for some reason he got this sort of stamp of approval that he has some like big potential coming and that he's going to be really relevant in the NBA, and then it never happened. And you're sort of sitting there wondering, why was he ever turned into this idea of a prospect in the first place? And like, when he was never that good and then never became that good. I'm starting to feel that way about Leonard Miller. We've been told that if he figures out his shot, that he'll be a really good rotation player for the Wolves. And I'm saying we've been told this, like, national NBA experts have said this type of thing, as well as like people within sort of the Wolves community, I guess, breaking them down and saying like, oh, this guy's next up. Like, why is he next up? He should be if he's as good as we've been told he is, he should be absolutely dominating the summer league. He's not. I mean, he's fine, but as a second year summer league player, like, you should be dominating. Dacian Nix is low key dominating the summer league. He's not gonna be good ever. Leonard Miller did have one good game. His most recent game against the Sixers was a very, very good game. 22 points, 10 of 20 field goals. 8 rebounds. It was 13 rebounds, 8 offensive rebounds. That's an insane game. I have no idea who was playing for the Sixers that couldn't rebound. But 20 and 13 on 50% shooting is great. It's a great game. But he was relatively not that present in the first two games.
and he should be kind of dominating every game the way he dominated his most recent game if he's going to be the guy. And the sort of big thing that's always held him back is like, oh, we don't know if he can shoot at an NBA level. Even in his best game, is 1-for-5 from three. So it's just like, I think I'm going to come here and make a stance that Leonard Miller will never be good in the NBA. I think that's my take. I don't know. It seems like I'm hating. Like, he just had a really good game, like yesterday or whatever. But I think it's more likely that all the hype was just bullshit trying to turn a guy into something that he never was than it is actually it's going to be true. That is my Minnesota Timberwolves Summer League recap. A bit of news in the Vikings world. A guy died. I don't necessarily have a ton to say about that. It sucks. Yeah, that's kind of it. RIP. But we got to get Jordan Addison out of the car. I don't know what you can kind of do. Like, the team, surely he's lost his license by now. Like, he had a really, really bad speeding incident last offseason at this exact time, basically. And now he's got a Dewey. Surely he doesn't have a license anymore. But, like, the way that he's been sort of treating the driving the car, the responsibility that he's taken behind the wheel doesn't indicate to me that he will really give a shit. If he doesn't have a license, he'll probably just hop in there and drive anyway. But we got to figure that out as an organization. Like, if he's still allowed to drive legally, I think the Vikings should take away that right. The Vikings should make it illegal, like, bench him for half if he ever drives again or something. Every time he gets in the wheel is one drive. Ooh, this is good. Every time he drives in real life is one drive he's not allowed to play for the Vikings. Obviously, we won't do that because we need to win, and he's a good player. But somebody's got to keep him out from behind the wheel. You can't exactly say this one was because of your dog. But yeah, you got to figure that out. This is the time of the NFL schedule, like, where if there's any news about your team, it's almost always bad. It's never like, so-and-so did great charity work in their free period in the off-season. Like, that happens. I mean, it does happen, and maybe follow the team account or something, they'll highlight it or whatever, but it's never, like, actual. Like, if you're getting an ESPN notification for your team, for your NFL team in July, it's for sure somebody did a crime, or I guess died in our case as well, but whatever. That's the Vikings talk. What do we report for training camp? That'd be sick. Have something to talk about. Vikings training camp report date. God damn it. Come up. Kicks off Saturday, July 27th. We got 10 days to. We got a whole week and a half. Some teams are reported right now. I think it's because they're playing the Hall of Fame game, but, you know. All right, post game. Just a little golf update, I guess. I don't know. Whenever I don't have a post game, I just mash the talk about golf button and I talk about my golf game. So my foot is back. I've been walking around, wearing shoes. Everything's good. Foot's good. So I was like, all right, I'll go out. This was Sunday. I was like, all right, I'll go golf a bit. Still hadn't, like, done anything athletic, so I didn't know if swinging a golf club would be comfortable at all. So I was like, all right, let's just play 9. Let's not play 18.
just in case I start really hurting, I don't want to pay for a nine that I don't want to end up playing because my foot hurts. So I was like, all right, let's play nine. So I get like one of the later tee times. It was like a 6 o'clock tee time at this like public course in Coral Gables. And I'm a single, playing nine holes, whatever. So I go in there, they're like, oh, we don't have carts. Well, I was planning on carting just because I don't want to walk, but because my foot. But they're like, oh, we can give you a push cart for free. I was like, all right, bet, I already have one, but whatever. That's not the problem. I get to the tee, and it is the quote group in front of me is a 10-year-old boy and his mother, and nobody's playing with them. I ask everybody around me, does anybody have this tee time? Is anybody playing with this guy? They're like, no, we don't have a tee time. Well, I was like, am I the only fucking idiot that made a tee time and tried to follow the rules here? And they're like, yeah, you are. So anyway, this group in front of me is literally a 9-year-old boy who is hitting from the blues. He's a 9-year-old boy. He's hitting from the blues. And his mom is just walking around with the phone taking pictures of him. And, like, he's hitting 20 shots a hole because he's playing from the blues and he's 9. So, like, every hole is taking legitimately 25 minutes for him. So I'm stuck behind him. And I'm thinking right away in my head, like, all right, I gotta pass him at some point. There's no way this guy's teeing off before me. I'm gonna be so fucking screwed. But then I was like, who am I even playing with? Nobody has a fucking tee time. Everybody just like, oh, I'm gonna play now. And so there ends up being like people gather around the tee, and we eventually make a foursome, and it's me, this like 5'2" adult, he looks like a little boy, but he's an adult. His girlfriend, and then this dad who's not playing, and his like 12-year-old daughter, or like 14-year-old daughter, who's the one playing. And let me tell you, we never caught up to the little boy. We never caught up to the little boy, the 9-year-old boy that was playing from the blues, taking 17 hacks a hole, taking 25 minutes a hole, and we never caught up to him. That's how slow my group was. That's how slow everybody else was. The girlfriend of this 5'2 little midget boy had never played golf before, and at first they were doing a scramble. So every time he sucked too. Like I was the best player in this group by 15 strokes. And I shot a 47, so like I'm not good. So this guy who sucked but had super expensive gear, which by the way, all that happens all the time in Miami, and they all suck, and they're all the biggest loser of all time. He was trying to like run things for his girlfriend and keep her on pace, which didn't happen at all because he was never on pace because he sucked and doesn't know how to play golf. And for a while, they were doing a little scramble. So every time he'd hit the ball, she'd just hit it from where he hit, all that shit. And that was, like, fine. It was, like, okay. It was bearable. But then eventually, like, on hole five, again, we're playing nine holes. On hole five, she's like, oh, I'm going to start hitting my own ball. And she's putting up, like, 17s every hole. And it's just, like, exhausting to sit there and wait. I was playing basically bogey golf and waiting for seven shots in between my shot. I haven't even gotten to the 14-year-old girl that wasn't very good at golf either. I'm not even that mad at her because you got to start somewhere. Clearly her dad like wants to get her out on the course and play some golf so they can have something to share, but like whatever. Like I'm not even mad about that, but she wasn't fast either. Like she wasn't fast. It's just, and I can't like say, hey guys, like I'm going to tee off and go ahead, because if I were to do that, I'd just, there's a 12-year-old boy who's playing from the blues in front of me. So then, I mean, it was a disaster. I should have quit before I started. But, oh, by the way, like, we played nine holes. I can, by myself, I play nine holes in an hour and a half, probably. This round took 2 hours and 45 minutes to play 9 holes. I've probably played 18 holes quicker than that, than 2 hours and 45 minutes. And we started later than my tee time was because of the whole bullshit with the little kid and nobody being in a group. It was insane. It was the slowest round anybody's ever played ever. Again, there was a 5-year-old boy playing from the blues in front of me, and we never caught up to him. Also related, I signed up for a golf league here in Miami. So I was looking for some, I don't know. I really don't remember what else. I think I was looking to join like a men's night or something. And I like Googled golf leagues in Miami. And then this league called the Kendall Golf Tour. Kendall's a neighborhood in Miami. The Kendall Golf Tour came up. And it's like a tour that has like standings and shit. And they compete for trophies and shit. So I like filled out the Google form just to like maybe join next year. I was like, I don't even know really what this is. But I figured, oh, I'll fill out a Google form. Can't hurt. If I don't want to do it, I won't do it. So they just emailed me back. And there's a tryout tournament. There's like a qualifier for the Kendall Golf League on April 10th. So I'm going to be ramping up to my big Q school. My big Q school tournament for the Kendall Golf Tour. On August 10th, so that's, yeah, so it's gonna be a big, you know, preparation for that. I'd actually start practicing for real, if I, you know, I want to be good. But the thing is, like, it says in the Kendall Golf Tour, like, guidelines that you can't have a handicap worse than 30, and, like, I'm a good 5 years removed from having to worry about a handicap of 30. My handicap is, according to the app, which I don't really believe, is like a 15 right now. I think I'm more of like an 18, 19. But according to the app, the official USGA app, I'm a 15. 15.2. So, like, I'm a little confused, like, if you're letting dudes with 30 handicaps, if there's a rule for dudes that dudes can't have a handicap over 30, that means you've got some guys with a handicap of like 20 in there. So what am I really trying out for? Am I trying out to prove that I'm not an asshole and that like I'm a good hang? Because that might almost be more difficult. Just kidding. I should be fine. I think I'm okay with that. Maybe it's just that I won't cheat. Maybe it's that like I play quick enough. I have no idea. I actually have no idea if I'm supposed to be good in this tryout tournament or if it's just to like get to know me. And like, let me read the email, see if anybody's got some ideas. Where'd it go? You're invited. The KGL Tour. We'll be hosting the KGL Showcase where future applicants can play with KGL members and potentially gain entry into KGL Tour. Do I have to, like, fuck them? Like, what is it? What is the criteria on which I will potentially gain entry or not? We are building a community at the KGL and pride ourselves on our values, integrity, generosity, and curiosity. So I have to be curious. All right, I'll just ask so many questions when I'm there. Based on that, it seems like I just have to be a good vibe. I just have to be a good hang, and then I'll get into the KGL tour. Never says you have to know how to spin the ball on your approach shots or anything. That's the pod. Hopefully I make the KGL tour and don't have to play with these slow losers anymore. The emoji is a snail. Peace.